Hour number two of overtime. Fan Run Radio. Jake Miller. Davis Rangy. Davis, do I have something for us?
Let's hear it.
Preseason teams that are no longer ranked.
I saw this.
There are 10 of them.
Wait, let me guess before you do it.
Okay.
Notre Dame.
Yep.
Oklahoma.
Yep.
Florida. No. They were unranked. Sorry. Gosh, let me see. North Carolina.
Nope.
Oh. Gosh, what am I missing?
We beat one of these teams.
Pitt. Oh, yeah, Pitt.
Yep.
Another
team lost my alma mater.
Miami, clearly. Yep. Trying to get through ACC, just all the divisions. Miami, Big Ten, Michigan State.
Yep.
Iowa State was not ranked.
This team just fired their coach.
Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't believe this next one and who all wants to come to this university.
Arkansas. Arkansas. Oh, gosh.
You're close. You got three more. Another SEC team. They're about to fire their coach after they lose this weekend.
Auburn.
Nope.
Oh, A&M, clearly.
Yep.
They're like number six to start the year.
Two more.
Can I get a division?
I can give you a conference.
Conference.
Big 12.
Baylor.
Yep. And one more. AAC.
Oh, Houston frauds.
Yep.
Yep.
Got them all. Number five, Notre Dame. Number six, Texas A&M. Number nine, Oklahoma. Number 10, Baylor. Number 15, Michigan State. Number 16, Miami. Number 17, Pitt. Number 18, Wisconsin. Number 19, Arkansas. And number 24, Houston. Which one of these surprised you the most, and which one are you the least surprised about?
I think Arkansas kind of surprised me the most. I still think that they're pretty good. I mean, I know that their pass defense is not good. Neither is ours. But they win this week, and they can bounce right back into it.
So, I guess my biggest surprise what really was Wisconsin. I thought they were a better team than that. I really did. And then the least surprising, really the two, number six and number nine, nice, Texas A&M and Oklahoma.
See, I thought Oklahoma would be – I thought they would take a little bit of a step back, but I didn't think they'd be this bad. Like, I thought they'd maybe go 10-2 or 9-3 at worst, but I did not expect them to already have two losses. They're 0-2 in the Big 12.
They're going to have another loss this weekend. I don't think they're going to beat Texas. I think Texas is a better put-together football program than what they are right now.
But, no, I think the least surprising is probably either A&M or Michigan State. I mean
– at Michigan State, that one –
they're not good, man. Just because they had Kenneth Walker last year, he carried them the entire year. And now he's gone. And they've got to live with that $100 million contract with Mel Tucker.
Oh, and they're stuck with that. They don't have the money to pay him.
No. Magic Johnson, maybe? Chip in?
Oh, Magic Johnson. That is a throwback jersey I'd like to have.
That is nice.
A Michigan State Magic Johnson jersey. Indiana State Larry Bird jersey.
Yeah.
Like real ones, not these fake ones that you can buy off of eBay.
Dude, everybody – I feel like there's tons of Larry Bird. Everybody wants to have a Larry Bird Indiana State jersey. I just see him at, like, everywhere. But
I've got, like, three NBA, like, Celtics jerseys, Larry Bird.
They – when I went to the Celtics game last year, I think it was in March, they still had Larry Bird jerseys. Like, that was one of the main ones they were displaying. People still buy those. So.
That's the thing. If you're good enough to where you played – and your heyday was in the 80s, then, and people are still wanting your jersey, that solidifies you as a legend. I still think the holy grail of collectible jerseys, though, is the Dr. J New York Nets. Number 32, with the stars down the side.
That's a good one. I still have the Charles Barkley. I have a Charles Barkley jersey from, it was like 92 or 91 All-Star game in Phoenix. That one's fire.
Love a Barkley jersey.
I love Charles Barkley. I think I have a T-Mac jersey also, but he wasn't 80s. He's more early 2000s, late 90s.
Which T-Mac? Was it Raptors?
Houston Rockets.
Gotcha. Had a Yao Ming jersey at one point.
What could have been? I swear he was made in a lab.
What was he, like 7'6"?
Yeah, he was tall. I mean, he didn't have to jump. He's like Bol Bol and Taco Fall. They don't have to jump to dunk. They just reach up. They're there.
Trying to think. Any surprises that are in the top 25 now that weren't at the start of the season?
TCU.
Yeah, I did not see that coming. Not going to lie.
Kansas.
Yep.
See who else. I guess Syracuse is a good one.
That is so weird to me that they are in the top 25, given the fact that Dino Babers, it didn't look like he was going to make it through last year.
I honestly thought he was fired already. I didn't know he was still the coach there.
Well, you know, he was somebody that we were looking at in 2017.
That would have been dreadful. I don't think he would have been good here.
Nope. And Weston, former host or co-host of the Blitz, already had his shtick. Dino Babers. That was how he was going to pronounce his name if he was our head coach.
I would have hated that hire. I don't think he would have been much worse than what we did, but.
I mean, that thing is like, you almost can't do any worse than what we had. Now, I take it back, Chad Morris. Arkansas, that was awful.
Oh, my gosh.
That might be one of the worst hires in.
I think that is the worst hire in SEC history.
Did he win a conference game the entire time he was there?
I think he won one. Let me see. In 3 years, he was there.
Because, you know, his last game, they got absolutely blown away by North Texas. That was embarrassing. And the thing with them is the fact that Arkansas is not one of these programs that has always been down.
No.
Arkansas has had some success.
He did not win a conference game. He was 0-14 in conference and 4-18 overall. 2-10 and 2-8.
That is awful. And then Sam Pittman, of course, his first year was the COVID year, went 3-7, and then last year he went, what, 9-3?
Yes. But he took over for Bielema. It's not like he took over like a terrible situation. Bielema had them okay.
Who, Chad Morris?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is they were an okay football program. They weren't great by any means, but they were an okay program. And then he just cratered them.
And you should have seen the signs coming. I mean, SMU, he was 2-10, 5-7, and then 7-5, and went to the Frisco Bowl, and Arkansas decided to hire that.
Can you believe that we were looking at him at one point?
Yeah, I was about to say that because I remember Clay Travis said we were looking at him during the 17 coaching search, and I was, I'm done if he's our coach.
That entire coaching search, there could be a
documentary.
Really a 10-part documentary.
Like the Jeffrey Dahmer one now. 10-part.
I finished that last night.
I can't do it. It just creeps me out so bad. I don't know.
Yeah, I watched it from start to finish.
I they're so long. The episodes are so long. I'm on the second one, but I don't know. It's so weird. Why was he so weird? He wanted to pick up roadkill.
As a child.
Who does that?
Then wanted to dissect pigs at his house.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a kid I dissected a pig. I think you did too. I think everybody did at
everybody
school.
Everybody had to.
But who asked to take a pig home and dissect it on their own time?
Not me.
Did his parent? Why didn't his parents tell him to go play a sport or do something normal? It's okay if you don't want to play a sport, but picking up roadkill is a bit extreme.
Fun fact about the apartment where the majority of those happened is it's still just a vacant lot. They tore it down not long after, and they were supposed to do a memorial there for the victims, and they never did anything with it.
I So you finished it, right?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think if that was me in that situation, that lady that lived next door.
Oh.
Just smelling the dead flesh coming through her vent and knowing good and well it wasn't rotten meat like he kept saying it was.
Oh, man.
I mean, she called the cops multiple times. I didn't believe her.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but the episode where he gets evicted from the apartment or is told he's being evicted and he goes to meet with her, that was the part that was like, oh, my goodness, please don't do that. Please don't do that. Please don't do that. Yeah.
Dude. Ooh. Creepy. I think the weirdest part is it creeps me out. So I'm not, I don't care. I watch a scary movie, but just the part that all this was real. Like this actually happened.
Yeah, all this actually happened. And we have our weekly guest, John Dunn, coming up here in about
7 minutes.
7 minutes or so. You've seen his picture. Who does he look like?
He does look like Dahmer. Put the glasses on him and he looks like Dahmer.
Well, I mean, maybe it's a trend in sports radio. All your good guys. Russell Smith looks like Ted Bundy and Bob Saget had a baby. John Dunn resembles Jeffrey Dahmer.
I thought you were going to say Russell looks like Dahmer. I'm like, oh, I don't see it.
But no.
No.
Look up a picture of Ted Bundy and look up a picture of Bob Saget and tell me that is not Russell Smith.
Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Poor Christopher Gabriel. He was trying to figure out who his lookalike was. And Christopher Gabriel kind of looks like Sting the Wrestler. Like when he's got his hoodie on. He's got a black hoodie. It looks just like Sting.
I'm looking at Sting without the mask.
Interesting picture, isn't it?
Kind of.
You know his son
played. Dude has a big forehead. Sting.
Do you know his son played tight end at Kentucky?
Like Sting's?
Yeah. Steve Borden Jr.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Because Sting's real name is Steve Borden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. I don't know. Dahmer. I don't know if I can finish that. If it was like 30 minutes, probably. But now that's like 10 hours, bro.
Oh, you got to think about how long that all that played out. I mean, this played out from 1978 to 1991.
He was catching about a body and a half per year.
Mm-hmm. And it was weird, like, because he went to prison during that time. Like, he was a convicted sex offender.
See, I'm not that far yet, because when I finished the first, it starts in, like, opposite direction. It starts from when he gets arrested and then goes back to his childhood.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know where, I thought that guy was, like, his first victim in the first episode, and I was like, where?
It was about to be his next.
Yeah, that guy was the only one that seemed to have any sort of common sense. Like, he didn't drink out of that drink. And yeah, freaky stuff, man.
Oh, it gets freaky. It gets really, really freaky. But yeah, John Dunn is going to join us momentarily. We're going to go to break and try to get ourselves together here.
Quite a transition.
What have we done? Goodness, stay with us. John Dunn of the All Vol Call-In Show joins us next right here on Overtime on Fan Run Radio. Fan Run Radio Overtime continues. Pleased to be joined by John Dunn of the All Vol Call-In Show. What's up, John?
Not much, man. How you doing today, Jake?
Living the dream, man. Just trying to process still everything that happened this past weekend with college football and trying to get my mind wrapped around what is actually going to happen this weekend. You know, we've got the 2.5-point spread. That's down from the 4.5 that it was last week. But, you know, you look at what LSU did this past weekend against Auburn, and it wasn't very impressive and not a lot of impressive play from teams that should have just blown other teams out of the water, and they didn't.
Well, you know, this last weekend of college football, I think, you know, and I think week two so far was still the craziest week we've had of college football to this point. But, you know, I think there's, and I've been saying this for quite some time now, I think there's a great equalization taking place across college football right now. You know, you could use the SEC as a sample size. Vanderbilt You know, I mean, you can look at Vanderbilt from, you know, the past couple of years to where they are now, huge growth. You look at Missouri, maybe a couple steps back, but still somewhere, you know, still a – I would put Vanderbilt up against, you know, a Hawaii or a UConn or whoever, or Missouri up against them and still take the SEC school. I think, you know, from top to bottom, like Power Five conferences in particular are just really starting to balance out. You know, who would have said anything? You know, I've been high on Minnesota this year, but how many people, you know, before the season would say, well, Minnesota's got a shot at the college football playoff? Not many, but they do. You know, I think there's just, like I said, I think that speaks to the equalization of college football right now. And again, it's just taking place all over. And I think that's something we're going to see continue to trend, you know, in that direction, especially with the NIL kind of era. You know, here we are now. Schools can use basketball money for football recruits, baseball money, whatever it may be. Wherever the money comes from, they can use it on whatever they wish. So you could get a school that's been dominant at basketball for hundreds of years, that, you know, your Dukes of the world, that go on to spend some of that money on the football program. We could see a big turnaround from some of these schools. But, you know, going back to LSU-Auburn, that game, there were some things that I saw from LSU that do worry me for this upcoming weekend. Now, prior to the season, I did predict a 35-31 win for Tennessee in this one. But, I think it's going to still be a close one. I drew this comparison today. It's going to come down to whichever team has the strongest weakness. Tennessee's defense, obviously, the weaker portion of the team, whereas LSU's offense is the weaker portion of their team. Those two teams are, you know, those two will be going up against each other, whereas the good defense will be going up against the good offense. So it'll come down to who can stop who. I think takeaways are going to be pivotal in this one. If Tennessee can hold on to the ball, which on the ground is where I worry about Tennessee turning right. The ball over. You know, if they can hold on to the ball, just take care of business against LSU offensively, they have to be a little bit more efficient, kind of mirror some of the 2021 Tennessee offenses last year with the high productivity in the first quarter. They have to come out fast in this one, I think. But I do think it plays to their benefit that the game is being played at 11 a.m. local time, 12 noon here. I think that's a great time slot, especially going into Death Valley. That's an iconic venue for a reason. You do not want to play there. You know, you want to play there to say, hey, I've played in Death Valley, but you don't want to go there. You know, high ranking on the line, nighttime, and that place feels like you're standing on the San Andreas Fault. That place can get to rocking. So this plays into Tennessee's favor. And, again, I think it's just going to come down to who takes care of the ball. But I think we're in for a, you know, LSU, people have been counting LSU out. And I think it's a lot to do with Brian Kelly. I'm not a big fan myself, but I try to overlook that and look at the talent that LSU does have, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So these guys do present a little bit of worry for me, but it was this time last year that Tennessee really started to elevate throughout the season. Game 5 of the season last year is when they really started to take off, and that would be a really good time for them to kind of duplicate that.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, too, LSU having more, quote-unquote, talent on the roster. You look at the talent composite, obviously LSU is going to be ranked above Tennessee, and so was Florida. And I think we saw with Tennessee and Florida, you can have more talent on the team, but the other side of the sideline might just be more put together in a sense, as in they've got the better game plan. You know, they might have the better coaching. Now, Billy Napier obviously still in year one, but then you look at coaches like Mike Leach, coaches that have taken a bunch of 3 stars and 2 stars and just made it work, and they keep making it work, and that's why they're able to stay in the jobs that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. Stability, continuity are two big things. You know, you look to, and I really hate to, I absolutely hate to toot any Kentucky horn whatsoever, but I will always stand for Mark Stoops. I love that man to death. He's a great coach. I really like the blue-collar work ethic of his teams. I really wish he coached anywhere else in the country. That guy, what he's been able to do, and again, it just speaks to consistency and continuity. You know, he's fallen on some hard times, and now you look at Kentucky over the past couple of years, they've been a fairly consistent program, fairly successful program. So, you know, that goes back to you may have more talent on the field, but, you know, that doesn't always translate to a W. It could go back to who has the better coach. You know, we saw that in the Florida-Tennessee game, as you said. Billy Napier doesn't necessarily mean that he's a worse coach than Josh Heupel. It's just his first year. Josh Heupel has a more stable program. You know, like you said, a much more put-together sideline. The stability plays a bigger factor than what a lot of people think. Now, you can look at Tennessee's record from, you know, 2009 to 2020, you know, and you can say, hey, well, there was a lot of turmoil in this time period. Does that have anything to do with a win-loss record? You know, some of the terrible – 2017 was the very worst football season Tennessee football has ever had. up until that point, there were two teams in the entire country that had never lost eight games, Ohio State and Tennessee. Now Ohio State is the only team left in history of college football that has never lost more than seven games. 2017, worst year in Tennessee football history. Last year, Butch Jones. Come back in, you have more turmoil with Jeremy Pruitt. We all know how that shook out. Now you're getting some, we're starting to see something, and you know, we've talked about it a lot, Jake, you and I, is the stability from the top to the bottom. And that's every athletics program in Tennessee. And that starts with Danny White. You know, I talk about him, it seems like, every single week, but it's hard not to. You know, when everything just kind of gravitates right back to him, he's a beacon. And he's done a tremendous job here. And I think the stability of the Tennessee program is another reason we're seeing the success we're seeing, because too many times in the past, you know, I referenced that turmoil era there. You know, that game against Florida, that's a loss. They recovered that onside kick. Everybody just, for lack of a better term, you know, pees down their leg and panics and loses that football game to Florida. We've seen it way too many times in the past, mm-hmm. way too many times. And now you're starting to see continuity, you know, like I said, consistency, growth, stability out of this program, and that's playing into Tennessee's success, and we'll hope it carries into Saturday.
Absolutely. I'm glad you referenced the 2017 team. While we were talking on the talent composite and teams that had talent, you know, that was a team where it was the graduating class of what would have been Jalen Hurts' class had he not transferred. And then the class after that, you had the number two class and the number four class in the country. And by the time those guys are ready to graduate or ready to declare for the NFL draft, that's what you were left with. Like, that's what bad coaching can do. And, I mean, everyone wants to say, oh, well, Juwan Jennings shouldn't have went on that profanity-laced tirade on Instagram. Probably not. But, John, could you spot a lie in anything that he said?
Not a single one, man. And it's like this, you know, if you see, let's just say, just, you know, hate the scenario, but let's just say a child comes to school and, you know, says, hey, you know, dad hit me or whatever, you know, are you going to listen to the kid? You know, that's kind of what Juwan Jennings was doing. He was lashing out behind the scenes. He knew what was going on. Nobody else did. Nobody else knew what was taking place behind closed doors. So that was, in a way, him speaking out as to what was going on. We've heard countless stories of what was actually taking place behind the scenes. Revoked scholarships, demanded haircuts. I mean, just everything and anything that could have been done the wrong way was done the wrong way during that coaching staff's tenure here at Tennessee. And you hate it. You hate it. But, you know, like you said, he didn't lie about a single thing. Not a single thing. And as for the talent that was on that roster, you hit the nail perfectly on the head. It all comes back to coaching. You know, I mean, that's why coaching is so important. That's why stability is so important. That's why having the right guy is so important. And a lot of people didn't think Josh Heupel was that guy, but I would be willing to say that most people would, if you were to ask them now, be like, what do you think of Josh Heupel's, what he's done so far? They would say, well, you know what? He has done a tremendous job. I think anybody would be willing to say that. Even after the year they had last year, yes, they made it to a bowl game. The record wasn't great, but you saw a lot of things that showed a lot of promise. And we knew that coming into this year, it could be a big one. And, you know, they're on the precipice of 5-0 right now if they go into Death Valley and come out with a win ahead of what looks like a very vulnerable Alabama team. You know, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, you know, just spitballing. What are the odds that Tennessee goes into this game undefeated and Alabama goes into this game undefeated? Well, those are looking like very likely odds right now. I would lay some money on it. And if that's the case, Neyland Stadium is going to be the place to be, because you're looking at the two SEC juggernauts. No matter what anybody says, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Missouri, whomever wants to spout off about it, Tennessee and Alabama are the two juggernauts of the SEC. That's just the way it is historically. Now, currently, obviously, Georgia kind of has control of the East. And, again, that's another team that looks vulnerable. They looked very vulnerable last weekend against Missouri, looked vulnerable against Kent State the week before. So, I mean, you know, it goes back to the equalization that I talked about. But it's a big one. This one right here, you know, we talked about it before the season, Jake. Man, it's a big game. I think Pittsburgh and LSU – obviously, the Florida game is a big game, but I felt like they had that one pretty much under control. Glad they got that one down. But Pittsburgh, LSU, and Florida, those three games in the first five there, those are season-defining games. This could be a game that makes an 8-4, a 9-3 season into a 10-2 season. And this is one of those games you got to come out of there with.
John, what's up? It's Davis.
Davis, buddy, your voice is like audible chocolate. I'm so glad to hear it right now. I feel like I never hear from you, buddy. How you doing?
Good. So I just had a question. I guess it's kind of two-parted, but so me and Jake have been talking about the defense all week, and You know, I think kind of an underrated part that we haven't talked about is this is only the second true road game of the year. I mean, Byron Young talked about it today, but, you know, they can actually talk to each other on defense now because when we play at home, you can't even hear yourself think when they're on defense. And do you think that might play a little bit of a part into it where they can talk a little bit? Because, I mean, at Pitt, we got shredded in the first half, but when it really mattered, we stood up and got a stop. And the second part of that question is, what do you think D. Williams' role is going to be this week? Do you think he'll – I don't think he'll start, but do you think he'll get a little bit of playing time?
You know, it really just depends. We'll address D. Williams first. It really just depends on what kind of looks they're trying to throw defensively, and really depends on the score as well. Now, Tennessee, now this is the biggest thing that worries me about LSU's offense. They're anemic. LSU has a very porous offense. They're not very great. However, they do have something that has bitten Tennessee in the rear more times than not in the past, and that's a mobile quarterback. However, this defense is used to seeing a mobile quarterback and arguably one of the best in the country in Hendon Hooker. So what I want to see from Tennessee's defense, whether it's D. Williams or it's Kamal Haddon, whoever it may be, you know, now that Warren Burrell's out for the season, you never know who's going to be stepping up in those positions. I expect Charles to step up in those situations. I think Tamari McDonald's going to step up a little bit too. I really want to see big steps out of Jalen McCullough. That's the guy I've been watching in the back end the most this season. It's really just kind of, hey, man, this is it. It's your time to shine. Your name is Tank. You lay big hits. I want to see some defense. I want to see some big stuff out of you. But as for D, hopefully. We've been waiting to see that guy for quite a while now. He's a good talent, and I think he's going to bring some spark to Tennessee's defense when he does get onto the field. Now, as for the first part of your question, man, LSU is – they're an underrated team this season. And I think that a lot of people have been overlooking them a lot. Go back to the first part of your question. And what was the tail end of the first part of your question?
I was just talking about how it's basically on our second true road game of the year, and they can actually hear themselves.
Got you. Yeah. Yes, that's it, hearing. So LSU, it's Death Valley. And, again, LSU's been underrated all season. They don't think a lot of people are going to show up because it's an 11 a.m. game. That being said, like I was talking to Jake about a few minutes ago, that's very favorable for Tennessee. But I still think that these guys are going to turn out. It's not going to be as loud as Neyland, but it's still going to be a hostile environment. Now, the good thing for Tennessee is they did go on the road, like you said, at Pittsburgh and come out of there with a win, a gritty win. And it seems like the Tennessee defense is doing just everything they need to do. I won't say that they're underrated. I've still yet to see anything from this defense that really just has me on the edge of my seat, ready to watch them play every week. And I do like what they've been able to do as far as quarterback hurries, quarterback pressure on the season. Now, when it comes to zone coverage, they leave a lot to be desired. I really worry about pass defense. And, again, I just talked about the LSU having a mobile quarterback. I don't expect them to air it out much, but, Anthony Richardson coming into that game, we didn't expect him to throw for, 430-something either. Granted, he did get about 150 yards in those final, those last couple drives, but I digress. He still looked like a football player that day. He looked like a quarterback. Now I'm worried that they're going to let LSU quarterback do the same exact thing. Jaden Daniels, I believe, do the exact same thing. That worries me a lot. But defensively, being able to hear one another, communication is pivotal. You've got veteran leadership on that team that, could be calling out something that they haven't been able to hear in Neyland Stadium up to this point. Some of your younger guys, some of the guys that haven't seen a whole lot of time. One of my very good friends, Karat Garland, there on the defensive line, he hasn't seen a whole lot of time. So he may, somebody may call something out to him, hey, hit this gap or whatever, and now he's going to be able to hear that. Some of these linebackers will be able to communicate. Banks may communicate to Beasley, hey, you got one coming this way, you got one going that way. You've got motion over here, you've got a wide receiver over here, you got a tight end lined up, whatever. You'll be able to hear it a lot better. So hopefully that helps their coverage issues a little bit, but that's what it's going to come down to, I think. I think it's going to come down to the Tennessee defense yet again, much like Pittsburgh coming up with a big overtime play there, especially on that third down play. That big sack ended up being the play of the game, in my opinion. But takeaways, just like I was talking about with Jake a few moments ago, takeaways are going to be pivotal for Tennessee in this game. If they come up with one or two very early and take advantage of those, I think they put just enough cushion to keep LSU from being able to dig their way back into the game. If they get an early jump on LSU of two possessions, I think it could get ugly. But it could end up being a dogfight as well. So we'll just see what happens.
And, John, last thing, we'll let you go. I'm basing my prediction for this weekend based off of the recent history. Well, not necessarily recent at this point. But since the turn of the century, the history of Tennessee versus LSU in Baton Rouge. 2000, close overtime loss. 2005, close overtime win. 2010, close fourth quarter loss. 2022, close fourth quarter win.
Listen, man, like I told you just a few minutes ago, I predicted a 35-31 win for Tennessee in this one, and I think I'm going to stick with it. I think I'm going to take I'm with you on that one. I think it's going to end up being I think it'll be something like 35-24 kind of late, and LSU adds one late on. But yeah, that's the score I'm going to end up sticking with. I don't know what the point total is for this game right now. But I expect it to stay in the 30s. If it ends up being a shootout, I will take Tennessee 10 times out of 10 in that one. LSU just doesn't have the offense to keep up. But if either team can show up, LSU's offense shows up against Tennessee's defense or vice versa, that's going to be where your game is made or broken. Like I said, the team that has the strongest weakness is going to win this game. If Tennessee's defense can come up with early pivotal takeaways, capitalize on those takeaways on offense, it's going to be a really, really good day. Tennessee will move to 5-0 ahead of a huge matchup with Alabama.
So what you're saying is either take the spread, the Tennessee money line, or take the over, which is at 63.5.
Yeah, I would take the over. I would definitely take it. I mean, it's hard to not hammer the over with Tennessee playing football, especially coming off a bye week, well-rested. And I want to throw this out there. I've seen some depth chart stuff with Cedric Tillman starting. And that's exciting, but worrisome for me a little bit. I'd rather have him at 100%. They know more than I do. I won't say this or that, but I really like what I saw of Ramel Keaton against Florida. Had that huge Sports Center highlight catch. Brew McCoy, obviously, it's like they don't miss a beat. It's like a twin, basically, for Cedric Tillman out there when Brew McCoy steps in. So you've got two guys out there. Yes, it benefits to have two Goliath-sized wide receivers out there, and then a speedster like Jalen Hyatt, a little bit of thunder and lightning. But, I'd rather have Cedric Tillman just 100% healthy. If he does play, I'm excited to see him coming off of that, tightrope surgery, I believe they call it.
Yes.
To help him heal his ankle up and everything like that. I mean, if he's ready to go, then I'd say he's 100%. I don't think he would risk it knowing that he's got probably a really good shot at getting drafted this year. If Cedric Tillman comes out, that's going to add another element to the Tennessee offense. It's going to be really hard for the LSU defense. I've only got so many guys. Ojulari is my biggest concern when it comes to LSU. But if Cedric Tillman's back out there, Hendon Hooker has a countless amount of weapons on the edge, and then himself, and then we've got Jabari Small, Jalen Wright, and all those boys toting the rock. So Tennessee offensively should have a pretty good day, even though LSU's defense is pretty stout. If they can just do what they do, efficient, early. They got to come out, put the pedal to the metal, and not let up. That's something that Tennessee has yet to play a complete game. When they put one together in all three phases, they are going to be an absolutely lethal team, and I would be willing to say one of the best teams in the country. It's crazy the amount of possibilities that we could go on and on about. I'd be on here for 45 minutes to an hour if we did that. Listen, if Tennessee goes into this Alabama game undefeated, the way Alabama has looked vulnerable, if Tennessee comes out of that game with a win, goes and beats, was it Tennessee Tech, I think, the next week, Martin. Then Kentucky, which Tennessee Martin, excuse me, I always mix them up. But Tennessee Martin beat Kentucky. Going to the Georgia game unranked, I said this before, I'll say it again, that'll be a 1-2 game. And Georgia will not be the top-ranked team in the country. That would be Tennessee right there, because LSU is now a ranked game too. Tennessee pulls that off as 3 ranked wins right there. No matter where Pitt or Florida may be now, those will still reflect as ranked wins. That's 3 ranked wins right there with another one coming up next week. And if you have ranked wins against 17, 20, 25, and number 2, Alabama's number 1 now. If you take them down, you're undoubtedly number 1 after next week. If you beat Alabama, Tennessee moves up to number 1 in the country next week, or the week after, excuse me. So the possibilities are absolutely crazy. Then we're talking college football playoff. We're not just talking SEC championship at that point. We're talking college football playoff. Possibilities are limitless, but it's been a really long time since we've been able to even remotely entertain a conversation like this. And it feels really, really good. And it goes back to, what we talked about, Jay, just continuity, man, and just stability. It works out big.
Absolutely. John, tell us where to find you.
Guys, as always, you can find us at allballcallinshow.com. Shows were sporadic. We took last week off for the bye week. Going to have one tomorrow night, starting back up on regular schedule. AllVolCallInShow.com. You can find us on Facebook, AllVolCallInShow. Just search it on Facebook. Super easy to find. You'll see a little cartoon drawing of me. Just make sure you give it a follow. Turn your notifications on. Go on to Twitter at JXHNDUNN. That's me. And if you tweet at me, I promise you I'll tweet you right back. But, guys, I really appreciate you having me. Davis, it's great to hear from you, brother Jake. Appreciate it, man. Just holler at me anytime, boys.
Sounds good, John. We'll do it again soon.
Yes, sir. See y'all next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
See ya.
John Dunn making his presence felt on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines, as all guests do. Guys, Big Orange Phillies out on Manorville Highway. Good Phillies. Love that chicken Philly. Love those fries and love those drinks. Stay with us. Final segment of overtime coming up right here on Fan Run Radio. Final segment of overtime right here on Fan Run Radio. Can you tell me what is interesting about this Texas and Oklahoma game this weekend, Davis?
It is the first time that it's been an unranked Red River shootout since, 1929?
1998.
Oh, I thought it was a lot longer than that, but.
I mean, that's still a long time for both teams.
24 years.
To be unranked.
Yep.
And you know what happened in 1998?
Oh, gosh.
Here we go. Starting already.
Sound like John Dunn talking about we're going to be number one going into Athens.
We might be. You never know. It is college football, and anything is possible. If you've ever played NCAA 14, you know that if you play as Army or MTSU, there is a chance that you can beat Alabama.
I used to cook with North Texas. My friend was Bama. I beat him with North Texas. The Mean Green.
That was your go-to team?
No, by far it wasn't. But if we were just screwing around, like you said, someone would pick Alabama, and I'd pick the worst team imaginable. But I was pretty raw with the Mean Green.
So I don't think they played in the Superdome in the last game that was in there. But in some of the older games, I'd always go with Tulane. Try to build them up. Because they played in the Superdome. And it's like, oh, well, I can do this and have a crowd advantage. Guess what? You can fit 80,000 people in that arena.
True.
Or dome, stadium, thing, whatever it is. Don't want to misidentify a stadium.
We wouldn't want that around here.
Oh, my goodness. Some of that stuff is just ridiculous now.
Gosh.
Watching some NBA preseason right now, we got the Pistons and the Knicks.
We're pretty down bad for basketball. It's just the only thing on right now.
Charles Barkley has some good jokes about the New York Knicks.
Man.
He said he went to a hotel room. He left two tickets for one of his family members. And he came back and there were four tickets there. Ba-ding-ding.
Ugh, man.
What are some of his best rants? That one was good. The Phoenix Suns nachos rant. That was hilarious.
The stove one. Why buy a woman a watch? There's a clock on the stove.
That one was not popular.
He would get canceled today if he said that.
The fact that he's still able to do what he does with San Antonio, that one's just.
Yep. The churros. They love the churros.
Oh, my goodness. He says Victoria is a secret down in San Antonio.
I don't know what he has against San Antonio, but honestly, they're like – I watched them the entire time. After the game, I look more forward, honestly, to them than I do the actual game sometimes.
Well, that's the thing. That's why they're in the National Television Hall of Fame is because – between himself, Shaq, Ernie, and Kenny, you could, honest to God, not be a fan of basketball, but you could watch that and be entertained.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they do stupid stuff, too, sometimes. Like, Shaq going on a bike and going up this ramp and then just busting his butt everywhere.
Remember the time they put him on a horse?
No, but I do remember when Kenny pushed him into the Christmas tree, and he's probably weighs more than that Christmas tree.
Charles Barkley, this is one of my favorite little sticks that he has. When he's talking about the University of Georgia, looks at Ernie, said, "Y'all the only school in America that named your mascot after all the women that walk around down there." Bulldogs.
True.
Oh, my goodness. But now that's actually one of my biggest inspirations inside the NBA. They don't take it too serious. They're serious when they have to be. They go on there. They have fun.
I mean, definitely not like ESPN. I mean, there's not a show on any news network. I guess Undisputed with Skip and Shannon's like close, but it doesn't compare.
No, it's not even close.
I mean,
and the thing is, that's a good show.
Yeah, they're goofy sometimes. Like, they're goofy like Charles and Shaq and Kenny.
But they're not going to have me rolling in the floor laughing like inside the NBA.
No, they're not going to have a whole segment where they're just clowning somebody or Shaq'd in a fool or any of that.
Remember when you could get the Lakers and the Bucks before they were both good, the one game instead of paying for the entire NBA league pass for $6.99. And it was like two of the worst teams in the NBA at the time. And he's like, "Wow, that should be more like $1.99. Said he hadn't seen anything that bad since they stole everything from the Indians back in the day. It's like, yep, it is what it is. And then Ernie can't even do the segment because he's laughing so hard at the fact that it was actually $6.99. I think the funniest thing about it wasn't even that. Kenny thought that it was $6.99 for the entire season. He didn't realize that it was $6.99 just for that one game.
Speaking of pay-per-view, are you going to pay that $10 to watch the it's not even a real game, is it? It's an exhibition between Gonzaga and Tennessee.
It's pay-per-view?
Yeah. You not know that? You have to pay $10 to watch it.
Where?
It's at, like, it's in Texas. It's like something about a charity.
I know it's in Texas, but, like, you have to pay. It's a pay-per-view?
Yes. You have to pay $10 to watch it.
I mean, I'm sure we can.
I can tell you some other ways of doing it, but.
I mean, I'll pay the $10. I'll just come over to my place. Somebody buys pizza. Somebody buys beer. Somebody brings water.
See the date of that. I think it's this month, actually.
It is this month.
Yeah.
Because the regular season starts very soon. Speaking of Tennessee basketball, did you see where one of the preseason polls had us at number 9 that came out today?
I saw that. And, I mean, it's not bold to say that I think we could be better than last year. I think we're better. We're deeper. I mean, just every position. I think Tyreek Key is probably the biggest addition that you're going to have. And if you want to compare him to NBA player, I mean, they're literally like twins. Desmond Bane on the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. They both can shoot the crap out of the ball. They're solid. They're not going to do anything out of the ordinary, anything out of their game. They're reliable. And they're almost the same height and build, too. They're like literally twins.
But they are. I mean, I'm really excited to see what B.J. Edwards can do.
So am I. I mean, you got to have somebody filling that point guard role. I don't think they're going to put Viscovi at the one, although they might.
I mean, if he's anywhere near as good as what Phil says he is, I mean, if he was going toe-to-toe with Kennedy and getting the better of him.
Outplaying him.
I mean, if he can do that. And don't get me wrong, Kennedy was a great player. Once he finally came into his own, he was a great player for Tennessee. Now, if he can beat anywhere near as good as that, we're going to be in good shape. And I don't think anybody's going to argue with that.
I think, yeah. I like Ziegler off the bench still. I don't think you mess up any of the mojo that you have going with that. He's just like a spark plug. I think by the end of it, he'll be like one of those Grant and Admiral players that you just look back and they're memorable. They're just like one of your favorite Vols of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's just – it's going to be an exciting season. I'm looking forward to it.
As you should be, and so should everybody else. That is going to do it for us. Thank you, Davis.
Thank you.
Something else coming up next. No overtime tomorrow. Tune in tomorrow for 3 and Out right here on Fan Run Radio.